Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you two, not in a creepy way.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight...
Sorry, I'm still reeling from the cold open that no one will ever get to hear.
Tonight we're going to talk about the 2019 Terminator film, Terminator Dark Fate, directed by Tim Miller, who also directed Deadpool and created the series Love, Death, and Robots, series of animated short stories, which I greatly enjoyed, actually. Terminator Dark Fate, the most recent and maybe last forever of the Terminator movies.
Maybe.
So, did one of you see this in the theater?
I did. Boyfriend Jesse and I saw this opening night.
And what did you think?
It was okay. It wasn't great. It was about what I expected for the actors and the geriatric tap dancing that happened with both Linda Hamilton and Arnold Schwarzenegger. So... it was telling when we got to the movie theater that it was Friday opening night at the 7 o'clock showing, and there was 13 of us in an auditorium that could have seated 500.
Wow. And this is pre-COVID, if people can even remember that far back.
I know. So, we thought it was fine. I thought it was fine. I mean, it wasn't terrible. It was, it kept my interest long enough that I didn't fall asleep. So, but it just, I had, you know, there's some, it had some lag and it had some issues with tone. And it did that thing where they try to be funny in a cute way, which doesn't have a place in a movie like this. It really detracts from the movie and the gravity of, you know, the fate or the future of humanity being in peril, and they're cracking drape jokes.
Actually, I appreciated the drape joke, frankly. But so did your view change upon second viewing?
No, it was about the same. I mean, it didn't get any worse. You know, I would still enjoy seeing another movie, although I don't know that I would want to see the sequel to this movie necessarily. I see what they were trying to do. It was obvious to me that this is the attempt to reboot the franchise with another timeline, with other players, because now they've killed off, you know, spoiler alert, they've killed off Arnold Schwarzenegger. So, you know, they've killed John Connor, ostensibly.
The beauty about time travel movies is all that is fixable in the next iteration.
Perhaps. I mean, James Cameron, yeah, who knows? I think Avatar 2 is probably occupying most of his free time right now.
You mean 2 through 5?
Whatever.
I wonder what he thinks about the fact that maybe there'll never be another movie in a theater. Kind of takes away from that Avatar experience, I hear.
Well, and this movie, I mean, it was purportedly budgeted at around 180-ish million. Opening weekend was like 26 million. And then the domestic gross was like 60 something million, but worldwide it made about 270 million. So not awful. It did okay. It probably didn't make them any money.
But I mean, yeah, this is definitely a good international film. And had the actors been, instead of being Mexican, if they had been Chinese, this would have made $1 billion just by numbers. I'm not There's no racism hidden in that. It's just numbers, man.
I thought that was some kind of COVID dig.
No, not at all.
Just checking.
Yeah.
can't tell these days.
Oh, I don't make jokes anymore. So Drew, it's all lies. What did you think? You did not see it in the theater, right? Had you seen it before this week?
I had not.
And what'd you think?
I really wanted to like this movie. After about 7 minutes, I was fully prepared to love this movie. I thought the beginning was just excellent. But the rest of the movie is just an unfulfilled promise. I was really disappointed by the end of this movie. It made me sad. I was really bummed that I did not enjoy this movie more, because I so want to. I love the Terminator franchise. Like, the bar is so low for me to like a Terminator movie. I like Terminator 3.
Which is saying something.
So yeah. were you in your disappointment, is it because you're comparing it to the other Terminator movies, or just taking it as it is? As the story as itself, you're disappointed in it as an attempt at a Terminator story.
I am disappointed. What bummed me out was the beginning part of the movie took some big chances and some big swings that I really like. You know, the killing of John Connor with great special effects. The CGI in the de-aging CGI in that opening scene was tremendous. I don't know even if it was de-aging or if they used other people and made them look like...
I'll tell you.
Okay.
But it's actually kind of a sad story, but go ahead.
Well, it looked great.
Yeah.
It looked great. You know, the introduction of the... is her name Mackenzie Davis? Mm-hmm. Character?
Grace.
Was fantastic. You know, when she says, "I am human." That's great. You know, new setting, Mexico City... I loved it. And then it just kind of devolved into all sorts of stuff that we've seen before. Then the action pieces should have been really thrilling, but I found them to be really boring. And Arnold was good. I think The Dirty Secret is, even dating all the way back to the first movie, Arnold as the Terminator is really, really funny.
Yeah,
he's really funny.
Arnold is a good actor. Is a little bit. I guess it's not a stretch. I mean, Arnold actually is a compelling screen presence.
Yes, he is. And I thought Linda Hamilton was good too. She was a little creaky, but and good. But you know, the new savior, Danny. I don't think she's good in this movie. Like, it's not a good performance. She's really, really wooden, and since she's kind of the emotional heart of it, you're supposed to want to rally behind her to see what happens next. It doesn't work.
So here's a couple things.
Is this going to be a sad Edward Furlong story?
Well, not super sad, but yeah. So a couple things. First of all, Tim Miller, he wrote most of the action set pieces in great detail before the rest of the screenplay was even finalized. And it shows. Mm-hmm. Because you can tell that, okay, this, we want to have a Terminator movie, and we want to have a twist, so we kill off John Connor in the beginning, spoiler, and then we want to have a strong female leads all around, and so it becomes kind of a female empowerment movie. And it's playing with the timeline, and yet we're going to use all these great special effects. Fine. But here's the problem that I found, was that, and I think you both sort of touched on it. So we have three female leads, right? We've got Sarah Connor, who is Linda Hamilton, who like trained for like 6 months to get the scrawny, they wanted her to look like a former athlete. Like a former pro athlete training a new young athlete. And so she had like five doctors monitoring her strenuous workout and diet regime to get her down to fighting weight.
That explains the cranky.
Well, maybe, yeah. And then we have Grace, right, who's Mackenzie Davis, who's the new young hip Terminator human or whatever, cyborg enhanced human, whatever they call it, who looks almost exactly like a particular anime hero from, what is it, the Appleseed Saga. So there you go.
No idea.
Look up Appleseed anime and you'll see what I'm talking about.
She was the best part of the movie to me.
Yeah, well, and then we have, of course, the young Danny Ramos, who's, you know, who is, theoretically, she's supposed to be the young Sarah Connor, the new Sarah Connor, but she turns into the new John Connor. It doesn't have to be a womb, right? But, yeah, they are all kind of on the entire time. Like, their whole scenes are intense yelling at each other, and there's no real contrast between those three. I mean, the barbs between Sarah and Grace are sort of funny at first, but if they're both playing the snarky character, then all you have is like a snark battle, and that gets old.
In a comedy, that would be fine.
If there was somebody to play the other character or some counterpoint or to slow them down a little bit.
Or to be a better straight person.
Yeah, or the Danny character just isn't quite compelling enough. But yeah,
she didn't have any charisma.
Exactly. Yeah.
And quite frankly, I didn't care if she died.
Well, yeah, there was no reason to. The story doesn't even care. And here's the part of the problem with me is that I really miss the practical effects. Like, I kind of like the idea of the Rev-9 or whatever, the new Terminators with the separate exoskeleton or endoskeleton, I guess, and then the fluid metal coating that can snap into two different things. That's kind of clever. I like that. The problem is when every fight scene has so much CGI in it, it looks like a cutscene from a video game. Mm-hmm. That just took me right out of it. Like, I love the car chases, you know? I thought, hey, this actually looks like maybe a car was used in this scene, you know? Like, there were cars that were crashed. But any of the fighting scenes, when, you know, that first scene when Grace has that fight, like, naked and everything, I thought that was going to be, like, this is going to be a John Wick sort of thing, you know? This is going to be, you know, maybe there'll be some effects thrown in there, but it's going to be a lot of practical fighting. Now, as soon as any Terminators were involved, it was all CGI, and it was like almost like an animation. It was rough.
I was digging the first encounter in the factory because you know, their first fight, they actually fought like you would think robots would fight, not like humans. But yeah, that was the highlight of the Terminator on Terminator action for me, unfortunately.
To me, everything that was a practical effect, anything where people are actually fighting, is great. Like, I like good stunt work. I like, you know, good practical effects. But you just instantly see the seams of a CGI contest.
Yeah.
I wanted to like this movie a lot more than I did. It was fine.
Yeah. No, I'm the same way. I didn't want to like it more. I wanted it to have been a better movie.
Yeah, that may be.
I kind of went into it knowing it wasn't going to be a good movie, but again, you know, it was fine. It was a fine watch. It was a fine rewatch. It's not going to be my favorite. I hope that if they make another one, they go with a different story.
Well, and there's, you know, there really is something sort of magical about that T2.
Yeah.
Experience.
And also, you know, looking back, it probably doesn't help that the last couple months I've been rewatching the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Yeah.
Because that was really good.
It turns out.
And so, you know, we go from the Terminator movies to that, to Salvation, and then Genesis, and then this. It's like, yeah.
So here's the Edward Furlong story. I don't know if you read the quote from him.
I will not be surprised, I suspect.
Well, Edward Furlong was hired. He was on set for one day so they could capture his face for the and his image for the computers. So all three of the actors, there were stunt doubles. There was Maddie Curley, who was Sarah Connor's stunt double, and then they de-aged Linda Hamilton's face to put on that. And then John was the stunt double Jude Colley, and they de-aged Edward Furlong. And then the T-800 was stunt double Brett Azar, and they de-aged Arnold Schwarzenegger. And yeah, it looked great because you didn't see him for very long.
Yeah.
Right. Just quick cuts, and it was, yeah, beautiful. And so Edward Furlong's quote was, "We did some CGI. They paid me, so I mean, you know, it kind of bums me out because I'd love to do a whole one and make a shit ton of money. I'd love to do more, but we'll see what happens." Poor guy.
Yeah, pretty much sure that they pretty much ended the chance of you being in another movie.
And so, okay, I guess we'll go through the plot. Following, this is a direct sequel to T2, or Terminator 2 Judgment Day.
So it's supposed to just presuppose that
nothing happened after
through
T2.
Salvation and Genesis haven't occurred.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, so following the events of Terminator 2 Judgment Day, and yeah, it opens strong with Linda Hamilton, a young Linda Hamilton screaming about the world ending and nobody believing her, and oh, it's great. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, boyfriend Jesse actually said, he goes, "Oh, I liked this movie." I'm like, this is not the movie.
Yeah. So, following the events of Terminator 2 Judgment Day, Sarah Connor felt that her nightmare of a machine-ravaged future world were long gone. Those feelings changed when, on a beach in Guatemala in 1998, she watched in horror as her son, John Connor, was murdered by a T-800 Terminator, shattering her world once again. 22 years later in Mexico, a couple watches as a glowing ball of light drops a naked woman not far from them. A young woman named Grace Mackenzie Davis from Blade Runner 2049 and The Martian seems to be unconscious, but before they can get her any medical attention, local authorities arrive, making assumptions about the situation. As they try to apprehend Grace, she wakes up in a surprising delay of speed and skill disables the officers. She then steals the clothes from the boyfriend and his car before heading to the city. By the way, this is a great plot synopsis from IMDb. I have never seen so many exclamation marks in a plot synopsis. It is awesome.
Need to think they overcompensate too much.
Oh, I almost, as I read, I almost want to just emphasize the exclamations.
You could put the
please
you could,
do.
You could put the plonk sound effect in for each exclamation point.
The plonk sound?
Yeah, plonk. You don't know what the Windows plonk sound is?
No, please demonstrate.
I don't have a Windows machine, or I will.
No.
Just make the sound.
I can't make the sound.
Sure, you can.
I really can't. I'll find the sound and send it to you.
Or maybe I'll just get real excited. Oh, we'll see. So the next day, Danny Ramos.
Just on the last word of the sentence, get real excited.
Okay. The next day, Danny Ramos, Natalia Reyes. Here's some trivia. The casting was for a 20-year-old Mexican woman. Natalia Reyes, when she started filming, was a 31-year-old Colombian woman. Hmm. So good for her.
She looks great.
Yeah, she does. So she wakes up her brother, Diego, played by Diego Boneta, who is a singing star in Mexico, and greets her father, Vicente Enrique Arce, before she and Diego head off to work at a local automobile factory. Shortly after they leave, a glowing ball of light appears and drops a new Terminator known as the Rev-9. And that's Gabriel Luna from, apparently in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., he plays Ghost Rider.
Yeah, he was good.
Anyway, so the new Terminator drops into the apartment complex where the Ramos family lives. When Danny and Diego arrive for work, they are surprised to see that a machine has taken over Diego's job. A little heavy-handed. Danny goes to speak to the manager, showing her disgust that the factory is more concerned with automation than humanity. And by the way, when she took her hair out of the ponytail to go talk to the manager, did you instantly think of Bombshell?
A little bit.
I did. Totally. It's like, oh no.
And the manager is a white American dude, so you knew he was not going to do her any favors.
No, not for free. So, Danny tries to get the manager to consider keeping Diego instead of her before returning to the factory floor. Heading towards Diego, she is surprised to see her father there when suddenly the sound of bullets are heard and her father's body crumbles on the floor as Grace attacks. Danny is shocked at the brutal attack on her father before Grace grabs her and Diego follows. As they run, the Rev 9 morphs out of his Vincente disguise and gives chase. Grace attempts to fend off the attacks, but is helped when Diego drops a car engine on it.
It does make it more exciting.
This buys the group more time to escape in a truck, but not before the Rev 9 chases in a bigger truck, leading to a chase onto the nearby freeway. The chase leads the truck the group is in to crash, with Diego being impaled by metal bars. Danny doesn't want to leave her brother, but is pulled away in time as the Rev 9 crashes a vehicle into the truck, destroying it and Diego.
That's not even an accurate synopsis.
No, it yada yada is actually what I think is a pretty good car chase scene.
It is, and the way it's described makes it sound so boring.
Yeah, it's not. It's good.
Yeah, there's still hope at this point.
I don't like the Rev 9 liquid metal hands turning into, like, pointy stuff.
Edward Scissorhands.
It happens so much, and it just takes me out of it completely, because it's just completely, again, not even CGI, it just looks like animation. So the Terminator has now split into two formidable foes, one a metal endoskeleton and the other made of liquid metal. As Grace prepares for a last stand, an SUV skids to a stop, and out comes Sarah, wielding weaponry that incapacitates both of the Rev 9's forms. As Sarah examines her handiwork, Grace and Danny jump into Sarah's SUV and drive off. Here's a little piece of trivia. During filming, the director had to keep telling Linda Hamilton to stop smiling as she was firing guns. Which I think is the wrong direction, frankly. I'm not a director, but I'm like, no, if she's firing guns and having a good time,
yeah, it's a Joker. Make her
look more maniacal. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, this is the other thing that maybe it's the tone thing you were talking about, Jason, but I get that that's the Sarah character is supposed to be broken, crushed, whatever. She's been through some shit and that no one will ever even know.
Well, she's an alcoholic. She's a self-confessed alcoholic.
Yeah, and she's just crushed about the death of her son. And
unnecessary, by the way.
And when she sees Arnold, she becomes really upset. I think it was just a little too much for a little too long. You know, like a lot of characters just go from 0 to 100 in the anger thing for not to great effect. Like when Grace turns to Sarah and says something along the effects of, I know you're helping us, but why do I want to just keep punching you in the face? That was, somebody thought that was a clever line instead of it being natural in the setting. Some distance away, Grace's body begins to shut down due to the energy she expended in trying to fend off the Rev 9. Danny claims they should go to the police, but Grace claims that it will only lead to the Rev 9 finding them faster. Danny then takes Grace to a pharmacy where Grace grabs a number of medicines before collapsing on the way out.
That is not what Grace says. That's not her point. It's not that the Rev 9 will find them faster. It's that there will be a lot more dead cops.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. True. Yep. It won't matter. Going to the police just
fire this synopsis writer.
Okay. Oh, just wait. They are surprised to find Sarah outside having tracked them down. Sorry, having tracked them down. She explains that both Diego Vicente are dead before tossing Danny's phone out of the window, claiming that it can aid the new Terminator in tracking them down. I kind of love the idea of Sarah keeping her phones in potato chip bags. It's clever. Taking them to a motel, Sarah gives the unconscious Grace the medicine she needs. When Grace awakes, she and Sarah come to blows before explaining their stories. Sarah tells how she claimed to have stopped Skynet from creating Judgment Day, but lost her son, John, leading her to hunt down Terminators. Grace explains that she came from the year 2042, but instead of Skynet, the threat against humanity came from something called Legion. When Sarah claims she seems almost human, Grace explains that she is human, but she's just been enhanced to fight the machines. This had so much potential that the fact that Sarah knows this future that they avoided and Grace has no idea what she's talking about because it never happened in that world.
Right.
So, again, that potential. So, leaving the motel, the group are unsure where to go. When Grace inquires how Sarah knew where to find them, she tells that it came from an unknown source. This source sends Sarah coordinates that show where a Terminator will show up, and each text includes the words, "For John." Grace manages to use her enhanced cybernetics to hack into the phone and finds that the texts come from Laredo, Texas. Danny directs them to head to her uncle, who can get them across the border, feeling that whomever is sending the messages may be able to help them.
By the way, I really love this part.
When they're in the hotel?
No, the phone thing.
Oh.
I love the Sarah's like, how are you doing that? And Grace is like, future shit.
Yes, I like that too. Yeah, perfect way to solve that exposition problem. Mm-hmm. And yeah, this sort of yada yada is the whole, this doesn't even mention that actually Grace has the coordinates for Laredo, Texas tattooed on her body. Meanwhile, the Rev 9 has infiltrated a surveillance system and begins to track them down. This is the this is what Lucius Fox was afraid of. The three women manage to hop aboard a train and get to Danny's uncle. On the trip, Danny asked Grace more about the future. Grace explained that it took only 3 days to bring the world to its knees. She lost her parents, but was saved by those fighting back against the machines, before volunteering to come back in time to protect Danny. Sarah then claims she knows why. With John now out of the picture, Danny is the new Sarah and will surely give birth to the savior of the future.
Real ham-handed here.
Yes.
There is no doubt. No doubt what they're going for.
I you could just see the seams of the green screen when they were standing atop the fake train. Now, I don't expect him to go out and film on a train at night going through Mexico, but, you know, come on. Again, this is why Sarah Connor Chronicles look so great on TV. They use the same effects.
Yeah.
The three soon met Danny's uncle, Felipe, played by Tristan Ulloa. As he and his associates help to get them across the border, the Rev 9 is tracking their progress and sends a false statement to the U.S. Border Patrol claiming the group are hostiles. When they emerge from under a hole in the border wall, government agents are waiting for them. As they're taken away, the Rev 9 attempts to down a drone and kill Danny, but not before Grace manages to save her, but ends up badly injured. This is again yada yadaing some interesting action scenes.
But this whole detention center thing, what did it add to the movie? Like, if they cut out that entire part and they were just like, we got to go to Laredo, and they show up in Laredo, like, what are you missing from this movie?
Current events. They wanted to tie in all the politics to it.
But they do it in such another ham-fisted way that it doesn't land.
No, because the movie isn't about that. Mm-hmm. It's just an add-on. You're right.
Yeah, it's just like the thing with the machines replacing people in the beginning. Introduce an idea and have it go nowhere. Just like the phone in the bag of chips. Introduce an idea, have it go nowhere.
No, I mean, there's a funny line that comes from it later.
That's true.
Yeah, I would have been pissed, though, that if at the end they were saved by a phone and a bag of chips. I mean, that would have been... Again, I would have bitched about it being Chekhov's phone, but... Maybe not. I will never be satisfied. So, Grace manages to get Danny to a helicopter, but Danny doesn't want to leave Sarah behind. Sarah manages to find the two and escape, but not before the Rev 9 almost gets her. Grace chastises Danny for putting herself at risk, claiming she's too important to be doing that.
Yeah, and the whole Rev 9 in the detention center, like, fight with all of the border agents, it's just like a straight ripoff from Logan. It's like Wolverine's exact fighting style.
Also, whenever a character goes and jumps on a wall or a ceiling, I'm thinking, this is hacky shit comparable to Resident Evil 2. So if this were a horror movie, you could get away with that shit. But for $100-something million action movie, this is sad. It really is.
I guess that would make sense if... You said Tim Miller did Deadpool, right?
Yeah. I haven't seen Deadpool.
Well, the whole reason the character of Deadpool was created was because Marvel wanted to capitalize on their two most popular characters, Wolverine and Spider-Man.
Get out of town.
Nope. So they made a combination. Somebody who was kind of powered and deadly like Wolverine, but was a smart aleck like Spider-Man. That's Deadpool.
Nice. Well, the three fly to Laredo, where they find the source of Sarah's secret text messages, which are being sent to her by the same T-800 who killed John. Sarah's first impulse is to kill the thing, but not before Grace and Danny stop her. The T-800 claims that after he killed John, he remained without a purpose until he adapted to life as a human. Cue violins. Adopting the name of Carl, he formed a relationship with a woman and her son. This soon caused him to think of Sarah, and given he could sense when the time flow was disrupted by Terminators being sent back in time, sent her text messages to give her life purpose. Carl. I don't understand this part.
None of this makes any sense.
It doesn't.
He said he was trying to give Sarah purpose.
Makes no sense.
Because he felt bad that he killed John.
He doesn't feel anything.
He says he's developed things.
How is he getting feeling disruptions in the force? I mean, in the time continuum, in the... What is that all about?
It's his secret robot processor brain.
Well, if he could sense when Terminators arrive, that's great. But he senses it days ahead of time. Which is great for the plot, but ridiculous. Knowing the Rev 9 is still after Danny, the group are unsure what to do to protect her. Danny, however, claims that she does not want to just be protected and she wants to fight. The group then go about trying to get her acclimated to using weapons. They also feel that the blast from an EMP could disable the Rev 9, and Sarah reaches out to a military contact. Now, we should all like the training montage, right? There could have been better music behind it. There could have been an ending where maybe Danny jumps out of a pool and grabs Sarah and pulls her in and gets her wet, or Grace or something. But, you know, that didn't happen. There was just a silly, kind of a badass Linda Hamilton moment. But also, how convenient that Sarah has this EMP military contact. Like, the most convenient, you know, again, general exposition reporting for duty, sir.
Also, he doesn't have any problem with how crazy she is.
Oh, he's a straight-up terrorist, I think. He's stealing government supplies and giving them to a international criminal. Anyway, the group heads off to meet Sarah's contact, but the Rev 9 is not far behind. Chasing them onto a military base, Sarah's contact manages to get the MP and secures them transport on a heavy aircraft. It's here where Grace reveals the rest of her story and why Danny is so important. Turns out that when Grace was a child, it was Danny who saved her and united a number of humans in resistance that fought back against the machines.
Now, did anybody not see this coming?
Well, it's so ridiculous, though.
Oh, I don't disagree.
The ages don't match. The characters don't look what the ages like they would be. Like, the girl who saves Grace as a child looks younger than Danny looks now.
Also, the speech she gives to unite the people is really not inspiring at all.
Yeah, well. So, as they're chit-chatting, they have that conversation that we had alluded to before, where Carl, the Arnold Schwarzenegger, his cover is he runs a drapery company, which apparently this is a reference to an earlier movie. By the way, also, the term killbox is a reference to another movie, to maybe T2, maybe, I don't know. It's like, yeah, you lean on that so hard, and that's such a dumb phrase, it just took me out of it as well.
I noticed that Carl was able to have a dog.
Yes, even though that dog should be freaked out by Terminators. So either he messed up that dog, or he's become more human.
And they have all kinds of one-liners.
It's all one-liners. But I do like the fact that it was Arnold who actually ad-libbed the part about...
This is Texas.
No. He tells a story about where he was once had a customer who wanted solid color drapes for his daughter's room. But he was the one that added the line, "Don't do it. It should be polka dots, balloons."
Butterflies, polka dots, or balloons.
Yeah, that's not a good Arnold Schwarzenegger impression, but...
No, he had lots
it
of
transported me right to that scene.
Heidi, you don't need solid blinds.
One blah blah blah. One polka dot.
Good lord! Because Carl asks Sarah pointedly, you know, do you believe in fate, Sarah? This keeps coming up over and over and over in this movie, by the way.
Does it?
Also, she says, you know, I'm never gonna fucking call you Carl. There's the animosity. And then he makes the joke, you know, the reason that he's got all the weapons is because, you know, he was afraid that humanity was going to devolve into barbarism, but also because they were in Texas.
Which was clever. And as that scene of him with the Uzi in the background is kind of reminiscent of the scene in the first Terminator movie where he goes to the gun store.
Yeah. You know, I would just like to point out the MPs, they don't matter. Kill box? There's never a box.
No. Yeah.
There's not one box in this movie.
However, I've got another quibble, you know, while we're editing. Why don't we edit out the whole conversation about how the wife doesn't know realize he's 400 pounds and that they live in a sexless relationship and like, what? No, stop. You should just smooth over that part of it. He's got an adopted son and a wife. It's great. They love each other. It's perfect.
How does that work? Robot shit.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 She doesn't have to be like a crazy DV rape survivor who is basically living in a marriage of convenience with her robot husband.
She just likes his sense of humor.
Who doesn't?
And again, I don't want to yada yada the action scenes because, you know, they have the big old flight in the airplane and we have airplanes crashing right and left. But it just seemed kind of just over the top and
it's boring.
So, yeah, that's the problem.
I was so bored during this action scene.
Yeah, these are tens of millions of dollars per minute.
The Humvee scene was pointless.
The dam, the whole damn thing. I mean, I get you get to the dam, you get to the big old spinning thingies at the bottom, something electrical. I don't know, generators, whatever.
I think it's a giant alternator, isn't it?
I don't know. I'm not an engineer or a scientist, but
yeah, I would guess fine. It was a turbine generator.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, but you get to see all of Grace's great chain fighting, which that was at least impressive. I mean, it was fake, but...
No, but she did... Was there chain fighting? I know there's chain fighting in the car factory.
She was chain fighting in the power plant.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was spinning the chain around.
I wonder if Appleseed 2095 or whatever has chain fighting in that. I bet it does. Maybe not. That was clever, but chain's a weird weapon anyway. Their weaponry largely gone, and the EMP having been damaged in this whole gigantic plane, trains, and automobiles chase, the group attempt to fight against the Rev-5 with all they have left. Carl and Grace manage to shove the Rev-9 into the spinning blades of a nearby turbine, the friction causing it to explode in a massive fireball, severely damaging the facility as well as Grace, Carl, and the Rev-9.
You know, if Danny's arc was supposed to land, this is where she needed to be the one to step up and finish the fight.
Yes, wasn't that the whole point of the fight?
That's what the entire movie is setting up.
Yes. Yes, because you have to get Carl taken care of and get Grace taken care of and neutralize Sarah in some way. And then Danny has to save the day at the end.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what happens, right?
No, it turns out this was not a female empowerment movie. This was a the ladies need Arnold's help to save them again movie.
Carl.
Sorry, Carl.
Carl.
Battle, battle, battle. Endoskeleton. Floppy metal outer shell.
You have to remove my power source.
Yes, they take Grace's power source from her. And, yeah, doesn't quite do the job, so Carl has to help. And Carl ends up getting killed at the same time, and Grace is dead, and so it's just Sarah and Danny. And then Sarah and Danny become like a crime-fighting duo. This is where Danny reminded me of the Summer Glau, but again, different. Better version. So, yeah, then we have Danny seeing Grace in the present day, playing with her family. Again, the ages make no sense. And, yeah. theoretically, Judgment Day may come still, but fade to black.
According to Terminator 3 Rise of the Machines, it's inevitable.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Has Jason maybe fallen asleep?
No. I'm thinking.
Oh, please tell me what you're thinking. Thinking about snacks later.
It actually works better that way.
Yeah. Well, audio format. There's that. Yeah.
Well, no, I was just, you know, it was all for John.
What was that? I did it for Johnny.
Yeah.
Everybody run. Terminator's got a gun.
Julie Brown.
Yeah. Not downtown.
Nope, the other one.
Uptown Girl. You know, it's funny because I'm disappointed in talking about the movie, but it was fine. You know, if you're watching this in a streaming service and don't have to pay extra for it, I think it's great. if you bought it for $14.99 on iTunes, I would see how you can take that back.
It's only $9.99 on Amazon.
Oh, that's good. I guess if you're a completionist, great. You know, I mean, I applaud Linda Hamilton. Actually, Linda Hamilton, Mackenzie Phillips, and Arnold Schwarzenegger all do a good job. I know her name is Mackenzie Davis. Mackenzie Phillips was the whole One Day at a Time.
Yeah. Valerie Bertinelli.
Yum.
I should put my falafel back up.
No, she's got Van Halen juice all over her now.
You know, my children love the Kids Baking Championship, of which she's a co-host.
Yes.
And they know her as the host that Uncle Eric used to like.
Yeah. Still likes.
Let me tell you, my dream would be if Christy McNichol hosted a food show.
Oh, dear Lord.
Yeah. Anyway, so any other further notes on Terminator Dark Fate?
That was all my notes.
It was better than Genesis.
Yes.
Yeah, it was better than T3.
No.
You don't think so?
No.
No. I even enjoyed Salvation better than this.
Yeah, there was the action was better in T3.
Well, yes, you're right.
And there was suspense in T3. I had no suspense in this movie.
Okay, all right. I guess I will be persuaded.
No, you're entitled to your wrong opinion, but
no, it turns out most of my opinions, especially on this kind of thing, are like, I'll go whichever way the wind blows.
Yeah. What this movie made me realize is how much goodwill I have for this franchise, because the Sarah Connor Chronicles was so great and it explored so many concepts that would be really interesting when you think about time travel and Judgment Day and how to prevent it. And it just makes me, this movie really made me wish for season 3 of that show.
I agree.
So the first idea for the script on this was the people getting sent back in time. It's actually not the Terminators that get sent back in time at first. It's the humans that get sent back in time so they can kill Legion in its crib, to use a pretty stark analogy. And James Cameron thought that was a fascinating idea, but not his type of movie. No, thank you.
Really? So.
Yeah, he's like, oh, that's interesting, but that's not why I have what this world means to me or whatever. So that's fine. I mean, hey, it's his creation, right?
Sure.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe they would have to smooth over the imagery of killing things in their crib. You know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, all that time travel thing. Well, if we can go back and kill baby Hitler, like, well, I'd kill baby Hitler in a heartbeat.
Except
like,
Legion are all machines. Legion aren't people.
No, I know.
Oh.
No. People made Legion.
That was explored in the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Yeah, well, as so many other things were.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It turns out that was a successful series, at least from my perspective.
Yeah. I'm rewatching it right now.
Are you really?
Yeah.
How's it holding up?
It's great.
Bring back Lena Headey as Sarah Connor. She did a great job.
She did.
Put her in a movie.
Yeah.
You know, and as dumb as I thought having the Terminator named John Henry was.
John Henry.
The fact that I felt about John Henry at the end of the movie, or the end of the series. Like, mm-hmm. I started having feelings for the character of the Terminator, John Henry. And how Shirley Manson was fantastic.
Yeah.
Cromartie. Anyway.
Yeah. Oh, also, stupid name. Cromartie. I will not go dig back into the well, but you know I want to.
That show added the brother, Derek, and it was awesome.
Yes.
Like, it worked. That's so dumb on paper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, I don't even mind dumb. It's just if it works, it's great.
Well,
it's
not, also, it's just dumb. They committed to it. It wasn't, it was dumb.
Exactly.
But they went full force into it. They steered into this kid.
That's why I'm crushing your head. I'm crushing your head. I'm a head crusher. That's why that's fun. Because you commit to it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this movie was a lot of unrealized potential.
Yes.
It's a bummer.
There's a lot of kinetic
energy. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
No, I'm continuing that, Jason, because I think you're summing it up nicely.
No, I just said the movie was just full of kinetic energy that never got released.
Yeah, well,
it's all there. It's all potential. All the potential exists, but it never gets released in any kind of meaningful way that fulminates in an actual energetic display that you want to be involved in.
There's got to be more between the action scenes. There has to be a movie in that space.
I didn't care about anything in this movie. There was nothing compelling me forward. Like, Grace was the only really interesting part of the movie to me. And at a certain point, I just got tired of her character.
To me, to be successful, you have to be able to take all of the action scenes out of it and still have a cohesive story that you care about. Because action just heightens everything.
Yeah, but I think we've already discussed this movie was a bunch of action scenes that were then built. You know, a plot was built around.
Well, even that first scene of like the flashback where the plane crashes into the area, the playground or whatever it was.
War of the Worlds.
Yeah. That was a scene that was written for T3, I think, and just never realized because they couldn't pull it off with the current budget they had at the time.
Yeah, and if you want us to care about what is actually happening in the movie, especially a movie that deals with, science fiction topics like time travel and killer robots, if you want us to care about what's happening, you have to establish the rules for the things that matter. Like the cell phone thing, future shit, is perfect because it doesn't matter. It doesn't, that part doesn't matter. You know, they over-explained Carl.
Yes.
That part doesn't matter. But what does matter is how does Rev 9 work? What's the deal with that second skeleton thing?
Like, yeah.
How does that work? Because at the end of the movie, they kill one, but the other's still there. Like, how does it, it doesn't make sense. And even Grace, she's augmented. She has a power source. But she still needs meds because she overexerts herself. That's a concept that's introduced but not fully explained. Like, if the power source is so awesome that it can take down Terminator, why does she keep falling asleep?
Yeah, and they tried to say science shit by saying, you know, I was built for intense things, you know, because you don't fight Terminator, you run or whatever, right? Or you're expected to fight ends in 30 seconds or you're dead.
Do you imagine in a dystopian future building augmented human beings that require special medication that you're not necessarily going to have in the field anyway because you don't have laboratories or pharmacies?
If they just said there's a set of charging stations along, like for your Tesla, in the future, they could say, see, we can MacGyver this shit at the Pharmacia, but, you know, in my time, we'd be able to jack into the whatever they call it in the future.
Yeah, and while that concept is, it sounds interesting on the surface, it doesn't make any sense, because in the future they show there are tons of Terminators. So if you run from one, there's still more. You can't You can't develop something that just gives you a short burst.
Did you notice that they were very much like Matrix creatures?
Matrix and
Live, Die, Repeat.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
I was trying to think of the actual Edge of Tomorrow.
Yes. And yet, Edge of Tomorrow actually had at least a compelling storyline or a clever storyline.
That's a great movie. I'm bummed that they'll never make the sequel.
Oh, they will. You don't think they will?
No.
Okay. Yeah, so Brother Jay.
Yeah.
Your verdict.
C+.
C++ in honor of the machines.
Very funny.
Thank you. Drew, was it worth it?
I'm gonna say no. I'm really bummed, but no, this was not worth it. Maybe watch the first 15 minutes and leave satisfied.
But. And then go watch the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
I wonder what the novelization is like. Maybe that's really good.
The books?
I mean, I won't find out. But you know, given a little bit of
do you think there is a novelization?
Oh, there has to be.
Do they even do that anymore?
Sure, but it's cross.
They do for things like Star Wars.
Yeah, it's merch.
I wonder if there are non-canonical Terminator books.
There is a novel series.
Just search Terminator fan fiction.
Oh,
careful!
You'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
there is.
I don't know where they called him Furlong.
Why?
Apparently there's a 10 novel Terminator series.
Oh, excellent.
Written by William Shatner?
Yeah. What was his series called?
Tekken.
Oh, there you go. No, Tech War or something, right?
Oh.
Tekken is a video game.
Oh, and Liam Neeson series.
Yes. You know what fucking white supremacists are doing to this country? Nothing good. You know what you can't say now? You can't make any Terminator 2 Electric Boogaloo stories.
Damn boogaloos.
Fucking guys took a harmless word and made it into a fucking hate speech. No, was it a harmless word? Sure, I don't know about that. But at least it was a funny little silly joke about a movie that had no other meaning.
Book 1, T2 Infiltrator. Book 2, Terminator 2, Judgment Day. Book 3, T2 Rising Storm. Book 4, Terminator Salvation, Trial by Fire. Terminator Book 5, The Terminator Novelization. Which I don't know why they call it that.
Wait, hold on. Wait, we got 3 T2 books. Go to T2 Salvation, and then we go to the original novelization?
T2 Future War, Book 7 Terminator Salvation.
Again. This is a big slap on T3, I think.
I'm getting really upset.
8 Terminator Dreams.
The next one better fucking say Rise of the Machines.
Which is Terminator 3 Rise of the Machines.
Uh-huh. Okay, there you go.
9, John Connor Chronicles Dark Future. And 10, Terminator 2, Hour of the Wolf.
Why do you call your series Terminator 2?
I don't know.
Hour of the Wolf? That one sounds real dumb.
Yeah, well, it's just 9 books. It'd be like Friday the 13th, Part 6, Book 1. No, come on, people.
I really hope they're on Audible.
I don't even know that they probably are still available in print. Although they all say buy on Amazon.
I'm gonna listen to them all.
You can probably get it on your Kindle to read on the lake. What a relaxing thing out there on a canoe.
Oh, let me tell you, I have a story about why that might not be relaxing for housekeeping.
Oh, okay. Hey, did you get lightning out there tonight?
I'm not in Willow.
Oh, so you did, in Anchorage.
Yes. Yeah, that was lightning, right?
Thunderstorm. Yeah, we had a little thunderstorm.
So about what, 5:30?
Yeah. We don't have that very often in Anchorage, although it happens occasionally, a couple times a year.
I was actually mowing my lawn and thought, what the shit?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, and the Cleveland volcano is going off, and it's, you know, it's fucking 2020.
It is the end times.
Yeah, I guess. Oh, well, end of something. So, yeah. So, yeah, I agree with both of you guys. As again, apparently my I can be easily swayed. But, no, I mean, I think this is fine. This is a fine movie. Not good. It wasn't a good movie. But it was, I don't think it wasted my time the first time I saw it. I will not go seek it out again.
It wasted Mackenzie Davis.
Yeah. Yeah. She'll be in other stuff, though.
Just to make it up to her, our next episode should be a 3-season rewatch of Halt and Catch Fire.
Is that a Mackenzie Davis joint?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, housekeeping? Should we go right to the lake house canoe not being relaxing story?
I don't have any housekeeping for the pod, so I'll just preface that.
Yeah, me either.
Yeah, I'll go. The mosquitoes out in Willow are real bad.
I saw your mosquito fog or death machine cartridge, which was horrific.
Is it propane powered?
It's not powered by propane, but it uses propane, yeah.
Okay.
And an octanol attractant together to lure them in, and it just has a fan that sucks them up and traps them. We have two of those. They're supposed to be good for an acre. And so the first couple weeks, it was doing pretty good. That trap I took pictures of had been going for about 3 weeks, no, 2.5 weeks. And when I emptied it out, it filled about, I don't know. We have these half gallon Ziploc bags. I hope it's okay that I put dead mosquitoes in a Ziploc. Eric, I hope that doesn't offend you. but it probably filled about half of that half gallon bag. Then we got another mosquito magnet up and running. So that one was out back, actually by the lake. We got another one up and running up in the front of our house, you know, away from the lake, more towards the woods. And just in the past week or so, they have started, they're coming out in full force. They will swarm you the minute you step outside. Our poor dog has become like a Trojan horse for mosquitoes. We have to airlock the dog now. We have to let him into the garage and then, like, towel him off, even if he's dry, just to get all the mosquitoes to fly off him. Because he's black. He's a black dog. It's hard to see the mosquitoes on him to begin with. But he's just always, like, bleeding from his nose, because that's where they love to bite him.
Aww.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. And the trap we have in front is an older model, so it's got a smaller capture trap. It's, right, yeah. It's got a smaller kill box, so those have to be changed. They're supposed to last a week. This one did not last a week. It was full to the brim. And I was like, oh, shit, I gotta change this. And if I was smart, I would have had a second one, so I could just take that one out and put a new one in. I didn't. So the kill box itself is under this like plastic cover. It's got this little mechanism that when you press the plastic cover down, it presses against the swivel lid, so that's what keeps the trap open. So when the fan's running, it sends all the mosquitoes in there. And then when you open up the plastic lid, the trap closes. Right? That makes sense?
Yeah.
I'm thinking Black and Decker popcorn popper.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So I opened up the plastic and just in the time it took for gravity to close that lid, this like mushroom cloud of mosquitoes like blasted me in the face.
Oh,
like, oh, God. Like every origin story of Batman.
trigger warning.
Yeah. And I was, Yeah, I'm sure I did not look very graceful or manly in that moment, but...
Did you in slow motion say, oh no, and then get a mouthful of mosquitoes?
No, I started swatting at the air like I was fighting a phantom. So I took the little trap away from the contraption and, you know, moved it more down my lawn. And then, so this thing is swarming with mosquitoes, which are clearly not dead yet. And I have to figure out a way how to empty it. And I don't want to just like shake out all the dead ones and let all the live ones fly away to hopefully get recaptured.
Gonna need a bigger kill box.
Yeah, truly. We bought 9 more, by the way. they were on sale. So it's, again, not very graceful, but I managed to throw the whole trap into a gallon size Ziploc, and then while it was shut, try and manipulate it to shake them all out, and then squeeze the trap to the top to try and then open it up and get the trap out, and like try and hold it at an angle so all the mosquitoes are trying to fly up into a corner that's not open, while keeping all the carcasses from falling out, and then try and extricate the trap. And even that, I actually captured way more live ones in there than I thought I would. And even that, I still had another like just mushroom cloud of live mosquitoes escape as I got the trap out so I could put it back in the machine. And that little tiny trap, which is a fraction of the size I sent you guys a picture of, filled up like half a gallon. Ugh. And it had only been like 4 days. And our house was so swarming with mosquitoes that it started to get really warm this week. But if we had our windows open, windows with screens, for any length of time, the screen would just be
vibrating,
completely covered with mosquitoes, like a Hitchcock movie.
We may have to FaceTime you for 4th of July. My daughter will have a seizure.
Yeah. Well, and so we were not planning on coming back to Anchorage until tomorrow, but Tuesday night, the mosquitoes were finding ways into our house, ways that I cannot figure out. Because, of course, they've been all around the house as we've been going in and out all day.
Yeah.
And the dog, you know, it took us a while to figure out a good procedure to get the dog into the house.
They built a tunnel.
Yeah, without him just carrying in like a dozen mosquitoes at a time.
Coming down the chimney.
I think they're coming down our bathroom vents.
Yeah.
Because my wife and I went try to go all to sleep that night.
Is one strong one to take one for the team and hold the fan while the other ones.
Yeah. But yeah, we got into our bedroom, which is upstairs, and we killed probably, I don't know, 20 inside our bedroom. And we're like, this is ridiculous, but you know, we killed 20.
You have to start putting mosquito netting around your beds.
Yeah. And at that point you start to get like a little PTSD. And you start to become really paranoid.
Oh yeah.
Like anytime you feel any little something, you're just like slapping yourself on the side of the head, or
yeah,
if you see something out of the corner of your eye, you're starting to freak out.
Every time the hair on the back of your neck goes up, you think you've been infected with the Zika.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Anytime I feel just a little breeze, I'm like looking around for the next infestation.
Drinking gin and tonics with both hands to keep the malaria away.
Yeah, but we kept seeing them. Like, it didn't matter how many we killed, we'd be like, oh, there's another 3. So like that night we couldn't even sleep. I mean, it was like trying to sleep outside. Like the buzzing was keeping us awake. I would wake up because I'd just been bitten, and you know, there's something on my hand that was swelling. So I'd wake up like every 45 minutes and like hunt down another dozen mosquitoes. So we actually had to leave. They chased us out.
You literally bugged out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
We're going back up tomorrow just for the day to kind of water the garden and check out the house. But yeah, before we left, I taped up plastic over our vents. See if that's what it is. But yeah, I'm actually worried that we're going to go in there and just find it swarming with mosquitoes inside.
That is horrifying. Yeah. Seriously, my daughter will have a seizure. There's just no way.
Yeah, I'm hoping this is like some surge. I assume it's related to how much late snowfall we got. Sure. We've got some friends who have a cabin, you know, down the river from the Deshka, and they were out last weekend too. And thanks, Bruno.
Jesus Christ!
Thanks, Bruno.
Hey, Bruno.
Yeah, go chew on some ice.
Tracks today too.
And yeah, they said they were out there, and it was they said it was the worst they've ever seen. Bruno, come on. I'm sorry, like, buddy. Go ahead and drink.
These beasts took all my blood, Dad. I gotta hydrate somehow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have any photographic evidence of any of this?
You should
document it in some way. So you can remember the year of 2020.
I was gonna take a picture of that Ziploc. I was so traumatized that because the Ziploc was buzzing. Like,
oh yeah, for
sure. I kept it in my garage and I could hear it while I was packing up the truck. And,
hear it, Drew? Do you hear the buzzing of the mosquitoes?
I do.
I'm going to put that bitch in the freezer.
But
no, that's inside.
Yeah. But, you know, while packing up the truck in the garage, you know, there's tons of mosquitoes in the garage because I've been going in and out. I'm like having to do everything. In my mind, I'm like looking like a monkey. Because I'm, like, doing stuff and then, like, swatting all around my head and then trying to do stuff and, like, swatting all around my head.
Is funny.
It was bad.
Oh, man.
All the propaganda that the mosquito magnets tell you is that you will really start to see significant results in about 42 days of using it because that breaks a couple of the breeding cycles.
Do they not realize that Alaska summer lasts 38 days?
Yeah. But I don't know this year. Who knows?
Yeah, God, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, we haven't really had the big fires yet. So that's coming, I'm sure.
Plague of frog.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow. And maybe ramble, that's a brother Sanderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way.